Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. We are talking about discovering passion and purpose. You know, we exist on this earth for an undetermined period of time. During that time, we do a lot of things. Some of these things are important, and some of these things are unimportant. And those important things give our lives meaning and happiness. The unimportant ones basically just kill time. We all have things we like and stuff we enjoy doing, but how can you discover your purpose through your passion? How can you tap into what drives you while leaving the biggest impact an imprint on the world? That's what we are on a hunt for tonight. So are you ready to go on this journey with me? So people say, what should I do with my life? Or what is my life purpose? What are they actually asking? Well, they might be asking, what can I do with my time that is important? Let's take it back, as I frequently enjoy doing. Let's revisit your childhood joys. Remember when life was carefree and you had time to dream and wonder? For some of us, it might take us a moment to conjure up such a peaceful time in our lives. What did you enjoy doing? It might be easy to cast off, like climbing trees or playing in the mud, but stay with me here. What did you see yourself doing when you grew up? You know, before someone told you it was impossible, you aren't smart enough, get your head out of the clouds, that will never happen. What if you could ask your 8-year-old self that question again? What do you want to be when you grow up? Haley Miller is a blogger from Evergirl, and she has a few questions to get us started on this journey. And I'm going to answer them on my own, on my end, while we talk through them. But you do the same on yours. When do you forget to look at your phone? Well, let me think about that. When do I forget to look at my phone? Meaning I'm so enthralled with what I'm doing that I don't even think about my phone or somebody trying to get in touch with me. Well, one is when I'm exploring new places, seeing new things for the very first time. I'm always in awe and wonder. Or when I'm connecting with new people. I love meeting people. So when I meet someone new and start a conversation, I don't even think about my phone. Or when I'm creating, bringing an idea, a concept, or a product together, I can get lost for hours. What about, what were things you loved to do as a kid? Well, I love to build businesses. Now, that sounds ridiculous for a child, but I have plenty of childhood businesses that I ran or started and tried to run, from my own daffodil picking and selling business to homemade pretzels. How about that? And many, many, many in between. I also liked hosting plays and events as a child. So I would get everyone to my house and I would put on this big event and I would maybe interview people and audition people for the plays, or we had an Olympics one time. So I loved hosting that. Also, anything theatrical or dramatic. I was a very dramatic child, so lots of role play. What about you? What feels like active meditation? You know, what do you get just really that sense of calm feeling, something sort of you're in the current, something that you just want to do all the time? You sort of get lost in yourself. Well, for me, it's helping someone. I love connecting with people and helping other people. I know that sounds really too good to be true, but it can be anything, you know, just helping them talk through a struggle or a challenge, or just helping them see a brighter side, smile. Maybe I'll tell a joke. I also love presenting new ideas. I know I'm one of those crazy people. I love to present. I never get nervous presenting in front of people. I get sort of a lot of energy from it. And so I'm always up for the mic and presenting some new fun ideas. I love to teach. So I like when someone shakes their head and they get an idea that I'm trying to convey. It just gives me a wonderful feeling. And anything artistic. I love creating art, from anything from painting to scrapbooking, paper art, just lots of different things. Anything where I can be creative. I love that. Hope you're writing some things down and thinking about your own things that you love to do or that feels like active meditation. What about what lights you up? What just really sparks your attention? Well, again, anything creative like art, music, theater, anything like that. Again, meeting new people. You know, some people say that they get sort of drained from that. You know, a lot of investing emotionally into someone else is really draining. But I'm an extrovert, and for me, and I'm a people person, so for me, it actually does the opposite. It gets me all excited. And then, again, developing a new idea. I love having an idea that I think is really cool and then creating everything from the prototype to the marketing to pitching the idea and just launching it, basically. But what about you? What lights you up? What gets you on fire? What would you do if money didn't matter? Oh, isn't that just the number one question? What would you do if money didn't matter? If you didn't have to worry about going to the 9-to-5 to pay the bills, what would you do? Well, I would definitely create art. I always said I would love to move to the beach, but not if I had to work. I'd move to the beach to create and just spend the day in the beauty of the ocean. I would also volunteer more hours. I do a lot of volunteering now. I would do even more because I absolutely love it if I had more time and I didn't have to worry about money. And then I would love to travel. I've typically traveled for work, so I haven't done a lot of just vacation traveling. I recently went on an 11-day vacation, no work. Well, I did a little bit, but, you know, it wasn't a destination for work, and it was amazing. I want more of that, for sure. Now, look at your answers and uncover a common thread or theme. Looks like, for me, it's creating something, meeting new people, and exploring. What about you? Life is dynamic, and so are your interests, so don't just gloss over them. We might love things at certain times of our lives that we find we don't like so much at other times of our lives. But if you look at the actual things you love to do as a guide to finding your passion, you'll notice they can evolve into some pretty awesome moments, opportunities, or even a career that you didn't even know existed. Taking action to discover, practice, and evolve your passions isn't easy. I mean, really, it takes time, energy, openness to new things, and a whole lot of love for yourself. The more you put it out there, the more you show the world who you are and what you're about, the more amazing things, opportunities, and people come back to you. Now, let's take another step back and look at a bigger picture. Experience in life gives you a broader perspective, and you have a better vantage point to see how this passion might fit into the world. You know, I've always said it on Encouragementology, is that certain periods of our times, we can't see the forest for the trees. And I just went through the redwoods. Let me tell you, that would be a bad vantage point. Those are some pretty big trees. But it takes time. It takes experience, it takes evolving to really get above all that life stuff and really be able to get a good vantage point where you can see how things work out, how things come together. You know, imagine getting above it all and looking down and saying, oh, that wasn't a big deal at all. I know exactly which way to go to get around that obstacle, right? But sometimes it's not so specific, but a direction you should explore, you know, maybe something that you should look into. Sometimes it's how your passion makes you feel or how it encourages others instead of the actual act itself. I found my purpose a little over 2 years ago. That isn't to say it wasn't always there or that I wasn't exercising it to some degree earlier, but until 6 years ago, my journey was dictated by my ever-evolving life, trying to get somewhere. Marriage, child, still trying to get somewhere, child. Career change, multiple moves, still trying to get somewhere. People-pleasing, another child, another career change, more moves. Life delivered blow, another blow, life-altering change, career change, etc. You see where I'm going, right? I'm sure most of you can identify with a lot of that. It's hard to zero in on your purpose or even fully embrace your passion when you're too busy trying to stay afloat and, did I mention, trying to get somewhere. When I empty nested, I decided to put myself first and really figure out who I was and what I wanted. A big part of both was where, when, and how I could give back. My passion was people. I love people. I love to meet people, be around people, learn, study, and interview people, and help people. Whatever I decided to do had to incorporate my love for people. But before I could do any of that, I had to figure out who I was, the good, the bad, and yes, the ugly. I had to face my failures, admit my responsibility, forgive myself, find the lesson, and then move on, healthier and committed to being happier. To truly feel for another person is to have empathy and to possess the ability to put yourself in another person's shoes is to first identify with your own. Take some time for yourself, quiet time, where you can reflect on the different seasons in your life. What went smoothly and where did you hit some opposition? Think about each of the challenges and really look at them. Sometimes we justify or make excuses to make a bumpy road more smooth, but covering up the past isn't dealing with it or allowing you to move on. It just stays buried, but shallow, just below the surface, and can make embracing new ideas and new opportunities even more challenging. So ask yourself this question. Is there anything I could do to change that event for a more desirable outcome? Now, the answer might be yes if you could develop a time machine. But today, is there anything that you can do? If not, you have your answer. However, we are human, and a logical answer isn't always good enough, is it? What could you glean from that experience that could positively impact your future? If you can't change it, you might as well learn from it. It isn't always about avoiding it in the future. It's about changing your trajectory altogether. Okay, it all makes sense, right? It was in the past. I can't change it. So why don't I just move on, right? But what about the guilt and the shame? Why are they so hard to let go of? Well, Beverly Engel, psychotherapist and author of 22 books, including the bestseller, The Emotionally Abusive Relationship, The Right to Innocence, and Healing Your Emotional Self, says, when we harm someone, it's normal and healthy to feel bad about it, to experience regret, and to wish we could take it back or do something to make that person feel better. What isn't healthy is to continually beat ourselves up for our offense and to determine that we are a bad person because of it. The first experience is generally thought of as guilt, while the second is considered to be shame. Now, shame and guilt can feel very similar. In both experiences, we feel bad about ourselves, right? They kind of feel like they go together. They do, like peanut butter and jelly, a bad, bad, bad sandwich. But guilt can be understood as feeling disappointed in oneself for violating an important internal value or code of behavior. Okay? Say that again. Guilt can be understood as feeling disappointed in oneself for violating an important internal value or code of behavior. Feeling guilty can be healthy. It can open doors leading to positive behavior change. With shame, one can also feel a disappointment in oneself, but no value has been violated. Shame is incredibly unhealthy, causing us to have lower self-esteem, feeling unworthy, behaviors that reinforce that self-image. As we are learning more and more, shame can be extremely debilitating emotionally. Shame is responsible for a myriad of problems, including self-criticism, self-blame, self-neglect, self-destructive behaviors like abusing your body with food, alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, self-mutilation, or just being accident-prone. Self-sabotaging, like starting fights with loved ones or sabotaging jobs. Perfectionism. The belief that you do not deserve good things. Intense rage, like frequent physical fights or road rage. Acting out against society, breaking the rules, breaking the law. Continuing to repeat the cycle of abuse through either victim behavior or abusive behavior. How can you feel good about yourself when you are trapped with shame? And when you're a miserable person, how are you going to make everybody feel great? You're going to make them feel miserable, right? Pull them down with you. So letting go of that feeling lifts you up to the surface, right? Think of it as weights that are weighing you down in the water. If you could drop those anchors and pop up to the surface. Some have explained the difference between shame and guilt as when we feel guilt, we feel bad about something we did or neglected to do. When we feel shame, we feel bad about who we are. When we feel guilty, we need to learn that it's okay to make mistakes. When we feel shame, we need to learn that it is okay to be who we are. Self-forgiveness is not only recommended, but absolutely essential if we wish to become emotionally healthy and to have peace of mind. It goes like this. The more shame you heal, the more you will be able to see yourself more clearly, the good and the bad. You will be able to recognize and admit how you have harmed yourself and others. Your relationships with others will change and deepen. More importantly, your relationship with yourself will improve. Many people experience a lot of resistance to the idea of self-forgiveness. I don't know why that is. You may view self-forgiveness as letting yourself off the hook, as if self-judgment is the only way to improve yourself. But negative self-judgment and self-blaming can actually act as an obstacle to self-improvement. The more shame you feel about your past, your actions, your behaviors, the more self-esteem is lowered and the less likely it is that you will feel motivated to change. And without self-forgiveness, your level of shame will cause you to defend yourself from taking on more shame by refusing to see your faults and not being open to criticism or correction. You just sort of go in this hole. You know, you're licking your wounds, you're protecting yourself, and then you start getting mad at the world for picking at you, right? Can you see that little badger down there huddled up, getting angry with people? Well, the good news is that you can resolve to change your behavior and forgive yourself at the same time. In fact, the more you forgive yourself, the more you will be motivated to change. Self-forgiveness opens the door to change by releasing resistance and deepening your connection to yourself. Go back to those questions. Is there anything I can do about it? What can I learn from it? As difficult as it may be to forgive yourself for the harm that you've caused others, there are several effective ways to go about it. Self-understanding, going back and really understanding what you did. You know, look at it with a new lens. A lot of times we might have harmed someone or made a bad choice, and then we exaggerate it. We add all this extra ugliness to it. But if we really pick it apart and we see, hey, you know what? I was young. I was silly. I didn't have a lot of experience. You know, I need to be kind to myself. Also, common humanity, you know, really understanding just evolving humanity and how you start out young and unexperienced, naive, and how life just shapes you. earning your forgiveness, taking responsibility, apologizing, and making amends. Asking for forgiveness from your higher power. You know, making amends can be an actual thing where you do go back and you say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this or that. And sometimes it's the willingness to make amends. So in situations where it might be awkward or harmful, just owning your part and your responsibility and forgiving yourself, forgiving the other person, and be willing to make amends is sometimes all you need to do. The truth is, we've all harmed others. In fact, every single person on the planet has harmed at least one person in ways that have shaped that person's life. Knowing this and knowing that you're not alone can help you have compassion for yourself and forgive yourself. Feeling compassion for yourself does not release you from taking responsibility for your actions, but it can release you from that self-hatred that prevents you from forgiving yourself and free you to respond to the situation with more clarity. Rather than tormenting yourself with guilt and shame, having compassion for your own suffering and for the suffering of those you've harmed can help you achieve the clarity necessary for you to think of ways you can help those that you've harmed. Obviously, the road to self-forgiveness and self-discovery isn't short, right? And it isn't straight. And it isn't the clearest path at certain times of your life, but it's always rewarding. Living a joyful life, free to be yourself and connect with others in an authentic and loving way is the ultimate goal. Tapping into your purpose through discovering your passion is the big payoff. Remember, it may not be one big thing, but multiple facets of who you are. So don't get discouraged looking for the gold at the end of the rainbow. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that. We're going to dig a little deeper in our journey. Rebecca Byrne Callender is the enterprise editor and the former web editor of Management Today magazine, and she gives us 7 exercises that could help you find your true passion in life. First, ask yourself these 3 simple questions. Finding your passion could be easier than you think. By answering these questions honestly, you can work out what to do with the rest of your life. So are you ready? Some of them are kind of similar to what we've already talked about, but what subject could you read 500 books about without getting bored? Maybe you listen to podcasts or Audible. Maybe it's not reading for you, but what are you really passionate about that you just can't get enough of? You want to dig in and learn more and more and more. What could you do 5 years straight without getting paid? Remember, if money was not an issue, what could you do for 5 years straight without getting paid? What would you spend your time doing if you had complete financial abundance to do anything? Now, after this show and us talking about this over and over again, you should be coming up with some really awesome ideas. Don't presume that your passion should be your job. You know, everybody's always in that mindset of, oh, I've got to find my next big thing. And of course, if I'm going to stay afloat, it has to be a job, right? Well, Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist, novelist, once said, anything that gets your blood racing is probably worth doing. There are a lot of things worth doing that never bring you money, writes Heather Enos. You don't have to be great at something to be passionate about it. If you can't imagine not doing something, it's a passion. It doesn't have to be a moneymaker. Make your money some way that will give you the time for what you really love to do. Work out what you hate doing. So, might want to take that approach as well. List the jobs or tasks that you absolutely loathe. Once you've eliminated these options, your true passion may become much more clearer. Now, think about the people you envy most because of the work they do. What are they doing? Make a list. Even if you can't be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you might learn that you love leading and being part of a successful team. Maybe you don't have the ability to be a 5-star chef, but if you enjoy baking or cooking and serving people through your food, then there just might be a purpose for you. Find the things you're mediocre at. Even if they don't possess exceptional skills at any one thing, most people have a lot of specialisms that they are okay at. According to Oliver Emberton, founder of software startup SkillTide, if you fuse your mediocre skills together, you'll find your passion. Say you're an average artist with a decent sense of humor, he explains. You won't have much hope of an art degree, and you can't study humor as a subject, but you could be an awesome cartoonist. Or take an average business student with some programming ability and decent sales skills. The person is surprisingly well-suited to become the boss of others who were better than them in any one of those areas. Emberton argues that the most successful people, the ones that are the most passionate about their work, are almost never defined by one single skill. They're a fusion of skills, often not even exceptional, but they've made their fusion exceptional. Steve Jobs was not the world's greatest engineer, salesperson, designer, or businessman, but he was uniquely good enough at all of these things and wove them together into something far greater. Forget the eureka moment. Inspiration may strike some people in an instant. Suddenly, they know what they should be doing with their lives. For others, it will take some work. Logan Jay recommends spending 20 minutes each day thinking about the things that have interested you recently or opportunities that you've spotted. Your true passion is not found overnight, but it's realized through a series of discoveries or small interests. I've always regarded thinking, meditating as a process of reading, analyzing your mind, which in turn leads to discovering your true passion. Try asking close friends and families what they think you should be doing with your life. But don't put people on the spot, as they may rush their answers. If any of your nearest and dearest have hobbies or passions that interest you, ask to spend some time helping them out, giving them a try. Experiment with new activities, whether it's a new sport, language, trying a craft, or just as much as possible. Don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone and try something new. If you sat around thinking, oh, I've always wanted to do that, what are you waiting for? There might be something in there. Create something brand new. According to Emberton, the secret to finding your passion is to create something new. He argues that people are instantly passionate about projects, businesses, or services that start from scratch. Man after my own heart. When you create something new, you're inventing something to be passionate about. Whether you design novelty cushions or write Batman stories or start a Twitter account dedicated to fact-checking politicians, please don't do that. However, success is key to finding one's true passion, he warns. If your new Twitter account only has 5 followers after a year, you probably won't be too passionate about it. If you had 5 million, you'd have to quit your job. You must find success to fuel your passion. Try visualization. Imagine yourself getting up early, jumping out of bed, excited about going to work. You get dressed quickly, full of enthusiasm about your day. The sun is shining. You take those first steps out of the bedroom. Now work out where you are going. And what kind of job are you doing? Really see yourself doing that. I asked one of my groups to write down one thing they want to happen this year. Just one thing. It doesn't have to be a whole list of goals, but one thing. And then write about it so that you put it in maybe an index card, stick it in your pocket, and look at it often. Maybe it's your purse or your wallet, but you know what I mean. And really visualize yourself doing it. Are we getting any closer? I hope you've scribbled down a lot of ideas. How could you take this desire, this passion, and impact the world? Giving back is as self-nourishing as paying it forward. Find a problem you care about and start solving it. Just start. There are loads of great ideas and tons of compassion. But until you activate your purpose and start pouring into other people, then it's just good intentions. And in this case, it isn't the thought that counts. Where to get started? Well, That's half the fun. Look for a chance to jump in and then just go. Here's a little secret. The world is in desperate need of volunteers. And until you ask or respond when asked, you'll never experience that true reward. Now, obviously, you're not going to fix the world's problems, but you can contribute and you can make a big difference. And that feeling of making a difference is ultimately what's most important for your own happiness and fulfillment. We are going to take our last musical break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to pull it all together. I want you to walk away with some really good ideas to start fresh on this discovery. So we are discovering our purpose through our passion, and I hope we've uncovered a few things that you might not have been aware of tonight as you dug a little bit deeper into what you like to do and a little bit more about discovering yourself. You really have to tap into who you are to understand a little bit more about that. I found an article from a blogger. His name is Matt Valentine, and he is a father, a husband, a self-published author, and he writes a weekly blog. But he talked about how you know. How do you know when you found it, when you found your purpose in life? You know, some of us are lucky enough to find something we love and which gives us a sense of purpose and meaning. Others go decades lost and confused about what direction they should travel. So the latter was where he sat for many, many years. And it wasn't until his late 20s that he started to get some sort of idea of what he was meant to do with his life. And even then, when we believe we found that something, there are times where we question ourselves and wonder, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, for me, if I don't listen, sort of listen to the universe and listen to my higher power, I can go off on my own and I can be doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I've had tons and tons of business ideas. As I've told you, it started when I was much younger. But, you know, first, I want you to know that doubt is normal. No matter what you do, you're going to doubt yourself. You're going to doubt your ideas. You're going to doubt yourself. You're going to doubt that the outside world is even going to be receptive to what you have to do. But regardless of all that, there are signs you can look for that will give you a good idea whether you are going as to plan or not. First, you're waking up excited every morning. You're so excited. You could wake up even without an alarm, right? Your mind starts to spin about all the things that you want to do along this vein. Want to know the easiest way to become an early riser? Get excited about your life, right? Seriously, though, if this is you, then there is really only one of two possibilities. You're legitimately in love with what you're doing, and it fills you with a sense of purpose. You're temporarily excited, and that excitement will die down very soon. Now, it could be the latter, but if you're jumping out of bed in the morning, it's more than likely you found something that fills you with a sense of purpose, something you could devote your life to. Just be careful of the deception of a temporary excitement. Number two, there is no longer any issue. Let's do a little exercise. Imagine you're sitting at a table alone. I walk into the room and sit down across from you. I tell you that I have some bad news. It's going to take you more than 30 years to accomplish your goal. Oh, and there's no guarantee you're going to accomplish it. Now, you're left sitting alone with nothing to do but reflect on your life. How do you feel after hearing that? Chances are you feel one of two ways. Cringe. You feel almost instantly like giving up, and you could not imagine waiting that long to accomplish your goal. Or unwavering. While not preferable, nothing will stop you from accomplishing your goal. Even if it takes 100 years, you'll do whatever it takes. How you reacted to that scenario says a lot about whether you found your true purpose in life. If you've discovered what you're meant to do, you'll drop everything to commit yourself to it wholeheartedly. On the other hand, if you haven't discovered your true purpose, that touches your heart, that thought of waiting decades to achieve your goal, to get to a place, it's uncomfortable and unthinkable. Number three, you can answer the question, what would you do if money weren't an issue, without hesitation? right? What would you do if money weren't an issue? We've talked about it on this show. It's the age-old question. If you want to know whether or not you've truly found your purpose in life, there's no better way to find that out than to answer that question. A little forewarning, though, it's tough to answer it honestly, right? The problem is, for most of us, the question fires off our, you know, that's not true meter. We ask, what I would do if money weren't an issue? And then we think, but money is an issue. And then we proceed to answer the question with a hint of subconscious bias, which can be very hard to detect. Our answer ends up being somewhere between what our true purpose is and something safer and more predictable. You know, we're all pretty conservative. What eventually worked for Mr. Valentine is reminding himself before asking the question that he's just pretending. Tell himself, we're just imagining what if. There's no expectation. Stop putting all this adult stuff into it, right? Just answer the question. This simple shift in thinking allowed him to open up and answer the question honestly. In fact, that was the exact moment he realized his purpose. Purpose is something we all search for, but few of us have ever truly found. Beneath a subconscious bias developed over decades of early life that tells us we need to get a job and find something dependable is something truly rare and special, a unique, deep-seated purpose that only we can realize. Have you found your true purpose? If you have, celebrate that and really make time for it. Move everything else off your schedule that you can. Obviously, at some points of our life, money is an issue. So you have to find a way to balance it both. But depending on what your passion is and your purpose, I think you could probably infuse some of that into your work. For me, it's about people. So I'm lucky enough to work with a lot of people. And I can take time out of my busy schedule and really connect with them. Connect on a deeper level, not just work stuff. You know, really talk to them. Find out a little bit more about what makes them tick. We can work next to the same person for years and never know those details. So I make it part of my practice to get to know people better. You know, really pay attention to what might be fueling their fire. Isn't that fun? Maybe help them uncover their true passion. That's, again, for me, creating something new. So I hope that you've had a chance to really take a deeper dive into what fuels you. Being able to let go of the past, let go of people saying you can't, let go of just that drive and rechannel that into more of a purposeful way. So I challenge you, remove self-doubt and free yourself to dream a little. Don't lose sight of the wonder your true self had before life said no. Uncover ways to harness the joy you receive from discovering your purpose to positively impact the world. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone through.